Hello and welcome to Horrible Friends. It's a podcast and book club format, and this week we have Hush. Starting off, my name is Kyle.
I'm Chris.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Jarvis.
And the way this movie podcast thing is going to go is we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about the history of this film. We're going to talk about the film, and then we're going to give you our own little spin on how scared we are with our spoopometer. So starting out, Mr. Dan, can you tell us about this here movie from 2016?
Let's fuck. This is Hush from 2016. And, you know, since Chris is doing a synopsis on this, spoiler alert, this is Mike Flanagan who directed this and co-wrote this. And, of course, since this is Mike Flanagan, the other co-writer is Kate Siegel.
I think it's Siegel.
Wow. Sorry. No, I just messed up in my throat there. I'm going to try that again. You know what? I'm not going to try it again because I love that sound that Chris made, and I'm just going to go with my fuck up on that. I'm just going to keep on going. So Mike Flanagan, you may know him from doing movies from the podcast, such as Gerald's Game, Dr. Sleep, and he's also done a bunch of TV shows along with other movies like House, The Haunting of Hill House, and
House?
He did do House. He actually is.
He did Disney Channel's Smart House?
He did Disney Channel's Cory in the House.
Can I just say, I mean, let's take the time, guys. Let's tell the listeners, like, hey, welcome back, guys. You know, we're gathered once again to continue the next installment in the long saga that is Chris vigorously gulping down Mike Flanagan's cock for all of our listening enjoyment.
You're damn right. And you're welcome.
Yeah. Welcome.
Gulp.
I do enjoy getting to see the discography of Mike Flanagan and seeing these. I wouldn't watch this if it wasn't for Chris suggesting this. So a genuine, before I say any negative things, thank you, Chris, for bringing these movies to the forefront. So again, as I was saying, since this is a Mike Flanagan movie, one of the co-writers is Kate Siegel. She's also one of the actresses in this movie, and she's been in things like Gerald's Game, Midnight Mass, and she's also been in Haunting of Bly Manor, Haunting of Hill House. She does a lot of collaborative work with Mike Flanagan. And the other main actor in this is John Gallagher Jr. He's done a number of TV shows and movies at this point, such as Abandoned, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and he's also a Broadway actor. He won a Tony for Spring Awakening, which is a rock musical, not an opera. That'd be weird. I guess that wouldn't be weird. I don't know. Would that be weird? All right. Anyway.
I don't know. Kate Siegel and Mike Flanagan are like the new Rob and Sherry Moon Zombie. You know what I mean? Like, one does not play without the other.
And I never thought of that. That's a very good point.
Because, I mean, really, that's every notable piece of work that Mike Flanagan has done that I can recall off the top of my head has Kate Siegel in the forefront in some way, shape, or form. And she's tremendous.
She's great.
So good. She's so good.
She's either in the forefront or she plays some kind of character in the background. Like in Gerald's Game, she was
the mother.
She was the mother, like in all the flashbacks.
In the flashback, exactly. But even those small scenes were like so impactful. And can I just say, Kate Siegel is so impossibly gorgeous. The fact that she is with Mike Flanagan gives me and every other lame white dude in the world hope. Because it's like flashcards. Hold one up and then hold the other up and you're like, those two things don't go together. And you're like, they do. And so I can go on with my day. So thank you, Kate Siegel, on behalf of all lame white people everywhere.
High five.
Thanks. So the budget for this movie was around $1 million. For the box office, it's kind of hard to figure this out because this is actually a Netflix exclusive, and Mike Flanagan does a lot of Netflix exclusives. So I'm sure that there was some deal, and then the amount of viewership over a certain amount of years, he would get some revenue. But I couldn't find that from my very brief research that I did to find that. But, you know, just the fact that this is a pretty low budget film at $1 million, like that's pretty impressive, and they did a lot with what they had.
I do have a tiny other little bit of trivia about it. Mike Flanagan, I think it was last year, he had a series come out called Midnight Mass.
Yep, familiar.
So the book that this character, Maddie, that Katie plays in this movie, the book that she wrote that gave her her like fame and everything was a book titled Midnight Mass. And
I saw that. Oh. I saw
like,
that.
Originally, he wanted, he had the idea of Midnight Mass like years ago, and he wanted to, he was either going to write a novel himself or have it be like some kind of like stage play, and, or he was going to do like a movie, and he couldn't, like no one would take it. So what he ended up doing is he ended up coming up with this movie and just kind of threw Midnight Mass in it. And then it was a few years after this, obviously, like they were like, you know what? We'll let you do a Midnight Mass thing.
I love that.
That was really cool watching in 2023 because there's actually a scene where she puts the book up on the mantle and it says Midnight Mass. And I was like, holy shit, that's so cool. This is like worlds within worlds. Mm-hmm. Like, very cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's pretty much left to his own devices. Like, he's making his own discography. Like, he can connect and interconnect his worlds as much as he wants to. And I think he's done a great job of it, frankly.
Like, what a... I do... Before... Again, before I say anything negative about this movie, like, Mike Flanagan is crazy talented. Like, the stories that he tells, like, he writes a lot of his stuff. I mean, I wish I could be that creative.
And he's I'm always not even, like, doing
jerking
something.
Him off. Like, I'm just saying, like... Yeah, he's always doing something. So the runtime for this, which is another huge plus, the movie's only an hour and 22 minutes long. It's not long. It's a very quick watch.
Easy watch.
It makes it so easy. So I applaud that, like the keeping it nice and condensed.
Yes, thank you. Because having a movie that's under 2 hours nowadays is illegal, I
think. Yeah, it's illegal.
They made it illegal.
There's like something with Hollywood right now where they think that we all want to watch like a 3 hour movie. Like, no.
Yeah, no, we want to fill our whole fucking day with your ideas. No. I need a cool 90 minutes to like avert my life. It's kind of a dying art form, like being able to like tell a story in a condensed time frame.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I mean, you're even seeing things that are like that shouldn't be TV shows that are, you know, 6 to 8 episodes long. So now not only have you made your, you know, hour and a half movie that may have been actually 2 hours, maybe bordering on 3, now you've spread it out to 6 to 8 hours because apparently people like that a lot better than just watching a movie and just getting it over with. I don't know, man. I'm mixed right now with the direction of all filming. So
other 2016 horror movies that we could have watched but didn't. I thought we just did a 2016 horror movie list because we just watched the Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yeah, we've done a couple for
so,
sure.
So I'm going to try to give you guys different ones. I don't know if I used these ones before, though. So we had The Conjuring 2, came out in 2016. Shin Godzilla, which I have not seen, but I love Godzilla. I want to watch that movie so bad. And The Shallows.
Guys, we still haven't done a shark movie. Like, can we need to commit on this. Like,
honestly,
we'll do one soon.
I can't think of any good shark horror movie that was ever made.
The Shallows.
Oh, you're right. That's the only one.
Jaws. No, literally.
Jaws?
No.
I think that's about a T-Rex.
We're going to let it. Chris, just let him. Just let him. Don't pay him. Don't indulge him.
So the filming location of this is one spot because, as we said, this is a low budget. This was kind of a low budget movie. It took place in Fairhope, Alabama.
Hey.
Yeah, that's a place.
Is that... Anybody know where...
It's in Alabama. Been through that area, actually. Yeah.
All right. So we are at your favorite part of this history reading, and that is the tagline.
Gimme them.
We have one.
One
tagline.
Oh, well, shit. Well, we got to savor it then. All right.
Silence can be killer.
Take it back. take it back.
It's not good. It's really bad.
I send it back.
It doesn't even make sense. Silence can be killer?
Is it just because we've just become such gluttons that like Dan will like literally be like, hey, you guys ready for the taglines? We're like, yeah, Dan. And he's like, there are 33 of them. And we're like, fuck yeah. So when there's only one, it better be good. And damn it, if that's not one of the worst we've ever heard.
Yeah, I'm trying to come up with one on the spot. I can't.
All they needed to do was add one word in there. Silence can be a killer.
That would have helped.
and it would have been better. Not good, but it would have been better.
I can see it does improve, but not a lot.
All right, and with that, Chris, get your sweet ass over here so I can give you a cochlear implant and sounding. Here you go.
Flawless. Well, thank you, Dan. So our movie starts with horror author Maddie Young. She is deaf and mute because of contracting bacterial meningitis at the age of 13. So Maddie was a big kind of hotshot author, wrote a book titled Midnight Mass, garnered a lot of praise in New York City, but kind of got tired of that and moved to upstate New York to kind of isolate herself. So we see her with her friend Sarah, like a neighbor right nearby. Sarah's returning one of Maddie's books that she borrowed, and she's also learning some sign language from Maddie every now and then.
Buttshot?
Buttshot? There was a buttshot, yeah.
There.
Yep.
Didn't understand the butt shot, but there was a butt shot.
Yep. Liked it.
I think, all right, so from a serious standpoint, I think the butt shot was to show that she puts her phone in her back pocket.
Yes.
However, it's done very poorly because they basically meta it too much to the point where, like, Maddie doesn't see her do this. We see her do this, right? Or am I wrong?
No, I think she's watching her leave. I just got very like closer than friends vibes while she was looking, like as she was watching, because it just like zoomed in on her butt, and I was like, yeah,
that's for us. That's a special treat for the audience,
and that's for me.
But I, yeah, hey, but on the real, right? So like even going back to the title card, the first 2 minutes of this movie is just, it's Mike Flanagan showing off. And like, I love fucking with you, Chris, because like you have such a, like a legitimate love for his style of filming, but there's a legitimate reason for it. He is really talented. Between the title card, immediately I'm like, whoa, hold on, calm down, big guy. Some foreplay first. Oh my God. I feel like I'm like soaring over these fucking trees.
Also the fact that, you know, everything leading up to the title card, like the, you know, production company like flashing by and everything, like it's all silent. And even though, yes, I've seen this movie, yeah, several times before, watching it again for this, I forgot about that, and I was just raising the volume of my TV like, what the fuck is, same, wrong? And then, you know, the title card came in and just, oh yeah.
Yeah, don't worry, if you're not deaf before, yeah, the title card comes up, yeah, you're gonna be, because
if you accidentally,
I did not like how,
if you accidentally raise your TV volume all the way to 100 and not, you know, forgetting what's about to happen, you're gonna scream fuck and throw your TV remote across the room.
But I feel like he planned it though, because after that, because like after, you know, you're you know, wringing out the tinnitus in your ear, like you're wringing out the water in a fucking towel, but then you're hit with this like really sexy like dinner ASMR, like cooking ASMR. Dude, if I'm like just scrolling on my phone, like taking a shit, and I'll open up like a Michelin star review restaurant kind of like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, the videos where, but yeah, just cooking videos, mm-hmm, in general. Like, I will sit there and watch that thing for hours.
100%. Like,
there's nothing more satisfying than dinner ASMR.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell us more.
I poop a lot, so I watch a lot of dinner ASMR.
So as Sarah's getting ready to leave after talking with Maddie, the fire alarm inside Maddie's house starts going off. Like, we as the audience, obviously, we hear this ear-piercing noise, flashing light, but then we also kind of get the Maddie's perspective where it's just kind of the flashing light, mm-hmm, and just silence. But you can kind of, like, I don't even know how to phrase it, like, she mentions that it needs to be that loud so she can feel the vibrations, and, correct, you can kind of feel that.
Well, I mean, this whole opening sequence between the alarm, the cooking, is just a beautiful way to showcase, you know, Maddie's condition. And that's all it is. We're being introduced as the audience to her condition. It was brilliant, and it gave me anxiety, like the like hearing the audio going in and out, like back to her perspective, to the audience, and back. It was easy to get like really drawn in very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few moments like that in the movie where, you know, we hear the third person's perspective of like everything, all the noise going around, but then there's moments where mm-hmm. it's just nothing and we're hearing everything, well, quote, hearing everything from Maddie's point of view, which is nothing.
Yeah. And I found the first third of this movie to be like edge of the seat kind of scary, you know, like I was actually like the tension was building, it was going, and then I don't know what happened after that first third, but I it just lost me, I guess, and then it just turned into like a kind of you know, thrillery slasher kind of thing. I don't know, it was unfortunate for me because I really did enjoy the first part of this, and as you guys know, I tend to watch some of these while I'm like cooking dinner or getting ready to cook dinner. So she was cooking dinner, I was cooking dinner. I was like, oh, we're cooking dinner together. This is awesome. And then I realized I couldn't pay attention to the fucking movie because nobody was talking. And I had to read lips because that's what they do to you in this film. And it's fine if you're watching the movie, but I couldn't actually just not.
This movie made really it your bitch. Like you became deaf right along with Maggie's character. That's amazing.
Right. I would look down and then I'd be like, oh, I just missed a ton of plot because they were just signing to each other. So and part of that, the signing part and the reason behind part of this we discussed a bit, but I find the audacity of Mr. Flanagan to come out the gates with the fact that he just didn't want to write a script. He specifically comes out in an interview at some point and said, I didn't want to write dialogue, so I wanted to make a film without dialogue. I'm like, that's what? Amazing.
Yeah. It's still dialogue.
It's not verbal dialogue. Yes, you are correct, but it's not verbal dialogue. I don't know. It's very interesting how they handle it. So yeah, I guess you're right, but he didn't want to write dialogue, but he got some. I think there were some issues with that. But yeah, it's very interesting. This movie,
whether
very
we regard
weird.
It as dialogue or not, it was thoughtful and yes. It ends up being pretty beautiful between the conversation yes. between Maggie and Sarah, because, you know, she's trying. You can see she's making an effort and it feels like yes. a new friendship, but like one that's quickly kind of forming, so that there's already kind of like this bond that we get with the audience. And that's true character development because, you know, Sarah's not in this movie long. Spoilers. And but, yeah. but it makes us care. Right. Yeah. Because like already we're invested. Right. Because
we don't know how long Maddie's been out there. Like from watching the movie, I got kind of gather that she hasn't lived in this area very long.
Right. It's a new friendship. She's relatively new to the area. Mm-hmm. So this is all still very kind of like new and exciting for her. And so and it comes off that way to the mm-hmm. audience.
And the fact that she was able to not only like, you know, meet and befriend a neighbor, to have this neighbor actually really care enough about her to actually also learn, mm-hmm. you know, sign language to better communicate with her. And I really like that.
I also like that, like, she teaches her all the naughty words.
Yeah.
Like, I'm calling you all bitch right now. Like, yeah. But, like, even...
You can't tell, but...
Yeah. Even, like, my Spanish friends, I'll be like, hey, how do I say this? And they'll teach me. Like,
Pal
carajo just means get the fuck out of here. And I love that, right? That's a special thing I have with my friends, you know? Now they have a special thing together. Language. It's beautiful.
Okay, so after, you know, Sarah helps Maddie take care of her fire alarm going off, her food in the oven burnt, Sarah leaves, and then we just kind of see Maddie. She's trying to work on writing her book. Several times tries to FaceTime Craig, who I believe is like her ex-boyfriend, ex-husband, something like that. I'm going to assume like ex-boyfriend. She's finally able to, like, she makes dinner, you know, does her thing. And as like she's cleaning, you know, camera's kind of panning back and forth, following her. And then all of a sudden we see Sarah slam into the glass door of Maddie's house, banging on it, pleading for Maddie to help her. And we cut between Sarah's screams and just the silence of Maddie's perspective.
We all thought it, right? Like, deaf person's probably not the best house to go run to to scream for help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems pretty secluded, so I understand there weren't a lot of great options.
True.
But it didn't work out.
No, I guess the hope is maybe they're going to happen to be looking in this direction as I run up slamming into the door, pounding with blood all over me.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on in like these next couple minutes, and that's really a testament to like how well paced this movie is. That Kyle, I think you said it well when you said like the first third has you on the edge of your seat, even when it's not like super sinister. You're just like, you're really interested. And this part, like when she runs up, she's covered in blood, and you realize that Maggie has absolutely no idea. Like, I was absolutely on the edge of my seat during this whole thing. And even before that, like, we're learning a little bit of character development about Craig. Immediately, I'm like, nope, fuck Craig. If she hangs up on him, fuck Craig. I'm with you, Maggie, 100%. We hate Craig. But now I kind of feel like Craig deserves a second chance. You should call Craig. You should call Craig right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, Maddie does not notice Sarah outside the door. And then we see a masked man come up behind Sarah, grabs her, and proceeds to stab her. At least according to my notes here, roughly 13 times.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Specifically 13 times, actually.
Yeah. That was a lot, man. I asked before the show, Dan, I remember you going on record as saying, like, you specifically kind of, like, your bugaboo is seeing, like, stabby, kind of, it's like the stabby genre of horror movies, you know, the slashers that get, like, real, real intimate with the stabs.
Yeah, but, I don't know, they didn't, like, hyper-focus on it, so, like, it didn't really bother me when I was watching it, it just looked like he was kind of, like, I don't know. I didn't think it was like super gory or anything. Like, it looked like he was like shoving his fist into her like a bunch of times. To me,
I mean, that just speaks to how deep he was getting, which sounds like a euphemism, but it's not. But like what I'm trying to say is, like, it felt like there weren't a lot of punches pulled here, whereas a lot of slasher films, like take Scream for instance, like you'll get a stab, but it's kind of not perfectly centered in the shot, you know, like he's stabbing his victim in the back or something. You get the sound, you'll get the audio, and you know what's happening, but it's not like right in front of you. Whereas this, like, we are, the camera is framed perfectly to see like the stab, 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 jab right into the gut.
Yeah, and the reason I said specifically the 13 times is, I, if I'm not mistaken, that was his 13th kill.
Correct.
We see that later on in his thing. So I think that's why they did it specifically that many times, but it doesn't follow through, I guess, later on. But
this, I actually have some questions for the group. Now, Now's the perfect time to talk about it. Do we think that this individual, who, by the way, is only casted as man, like there's no name. We don't learn anything about this individual other than he is there to be a murderer. But what kind of murderer? Because we know that this is his 13th victim in Sarah. Like, he's already determined that he was going to kill Maggie when he gets to the house. He sees someone in there, you know, and if she had screamed and ran away, he probably just would have ran right in and killed her. And
yeah,
so he's already determined that. But do we think this is like a mass killing, or do we think this is part of a long string of serial murderings?
I think it was like a string of murder. Like, I don't think this all happened like within like a smaller time frame.
No, this better have happened in a really small time frame, because if it didn't, then why is everyone just chilling with their doors unlocked?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. So, and I'll be honest, I watched it at the time of this recording. I watched it last night, and I've been thinking about it all afternoon since I woke up today. So I just, because he's my biggest issue with the whole movie. I don't like his character. I don't think he makes much sense. He breaks into the house. He doesn't kill her. Okay, fine. I guess we can say he just likes to torture his victims rather
could
than
be the thrill of a challenge. He hunts her with a crossbow.
Maybe.
Because
that's my other problem. Is he a senior citizen?
Oh my God.
Using a crossbow? Because that's the type of people who use crossbows for hunting. It's not people who are at least in Jersey.
And hunters.
No, did you want Legolas to be the Jersey fucking murderer here, Dan? Like, what is your issue?
If he's going
to
use a crossbow, he's using use a gun, bro. Like, what are you doing? Like, I'm going to use my crossbow.
It's more quiet.
Like, it's so fucking stupid. Like, I hated that he's using her. And then a lot of his dialogue as he's going through, like later on when he calls the guy, he's like, you seem like a big jock type. I'm like, bro, oh my God, are we in fucking high school? Like, what the fuck are you saying right now? And he's like, oh, now we're going to have some fun. And he just walks around the fucking perimeter. Like, oh my God, I can't stand this guy. Like, he's not intimidating to me, and he takes me out of the fucking movie.
Huh.
I don't question that he would have a low level of intellect, and I think that might have been purposeful. I like the crossbow because it matches his character, because what he's doing is he's treating it more like a hunt And he had from the start, because you can actually see his expression even in the mask. You see when it like it changes from like his interest is piqued to like legitimate curiosity. And then when he realizes like she is deaf and she has no idea what's going on, it's all about the thrill of the challenge. It's the thrill of the hunt for him. So it made sense to me, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so back to the movie. So yeah, Killer slowly realizes that Maddie is deaf, and yeah, he starts to have a little fun with it. Maddie's sitting, trying to come up with an ending to the new book she's writing. We see like she has like seven different files of like seven different endings she's trying to figure out, and he kind of like tests the boundaries of like how deaf she is. Like he gets in the house and he gets to, I don't know, I'd say like a foot, 2 feet behind her, and he walks in, you hear the sound of his boots, she makes no reaction. He has the knife out, and so he starts tapping it against his chest and making noise with that. No reaction. So as the killer does get a little bit close to her, Maddie gets a FaceTime call from her sister Max, who is still in New York City, and killer kind of backs up, makes sure he's out of camera shot. And Max is talking to Maddie for a few moments, asking her how the book is going, you know, trying to convince her to come back to the city. She does mention that she thought she saw something move behind her. Maddie just kind of throws it up to, oh, it's probably the cat. And then, you know, call ends. She moves on. After a bit of, you know, she's walking around the house, we do see from the killer's perspective a few times, kind of following her. Oh, almost forgot. As he had walked away, he took her phone. And as she's back at the laptop trying to write more of this book, she starts getting messages from her phone. And the killer has been taking pictures of her from different parts of the house and sending them to her. And this is when she realizes, oh, fuck, someone's watching me.
That was chilling. I didn't remember feeling so unsettled the first time I'd seen this. It was nice to kind of experience that again. I just kind of forgot how hard this movie slaps, because this is kind of part of that first third I think you were talking about, Kyle, where it's just like, what the fuck, man? I think Craig was great. I think Craig was a really good guy, and I think we need to give him a call back. That's all I'm saying. I think we were too hard on him. It's been a year.
Hashtag
call Craig.
Call Craig.
He's changed. Call Craig. And what hasn't changed, we can fix him. Call Craig.
Yeah.
Maddie, call Craig right now.
I did like this part. This was a good part. I agree. Thought it was very, very chilling. Good atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Really puts you on edge. I just want to make sure I point out the parts that I like before I completely shit all over this and continue to. Because I like the movie. I'm going to say it now. I like the movie. But now I'm just going to shit on it from moving forward.
Man your fighting positions. Let's go.
Yeah, I think that we now have like, we have boundaries, right? We've set our boundaries. We've set our possibilities with, like, besides the hallucinogenic future sight that she has later on in the movie. But in general, we've now set the scene. It's like, she knows there's a bad guy. He knows what he can get away with. And now we're left with this. I think this is about where I started to like peter out from the, I'm actually scared, down to, okay, now we're just getting into the movie. So.
Yep, those were the moments that always pulled me back in, because I love her character. Like, it was always moments where she's hiding somewhere, she's hiding under the deck, she's trying to do something. And I'm like, all right, these are like classic horror movie tropes. Like, all right, he'll probably catch her. But then you think, wait, but she can't hear what's going on. So she's like trying to use her other senses. So she doesn't know that he's running back towards her. So it puts you back into like a scared position where it's like, oh my God, she's at such a disadvantage.
What I think you're all saying, you're just not saying it directly, is what she needs to do is learn his scent. And going back to what Dan was saying, that he seems like a man of low intellectual prowess.
Really adjust your senses to get that Phoenix Axe body spray scent.
Thank you. Thank you. That's exactly what I was
saying. He's an incel.
Yeah.
He's an incel, right? We could just come out and say it, right? He's 100%. An incel.
Even with the neck tattoo, man. Neck tattoos are panty droppers, but yeah, man. That's Axe body spray.
Not that one.
That is Axe body
Not
spray.
Not that one.
I don't know, man. That neck tattoo, some Axe body spray.
Yeah, I think that's the only, like, thing that they kept out of this was scent, because you can't, that's even harder to portray than sound with no visual. You know what I mean? Like,
also, guys, let's be real. If this is an incel, he does not smell like Axe body spray. He smells like B.O.
He smells like B.O., but has used Axe body spray to try and cover it up, but the B.O. is too strong.
Yep.
So it's a mixture of onions and running at almost half empty can of body spray.
Well, so what he does is he sprays his shirt.
That's it. Yep.
So you get both. You get the intermingle of the nasty and the Phoenix body spray. I like how you call it the Phoenix body spray.
Yes.
I can smell that.
See?
I can still smell it. It's stuck up.
That brings back painful memories. Man, 13.
It smells like
13 was rough.
Deodorant and nail polish remover.
Confusing times, 13 was.
You mean 13 to 17 for most people?
What? No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
You guys stopped?
You guys
stopped using Phoenix? You guys aren't on the Phoenix anymore? They call me Dumbledore, baby.
If that is your sexual nickname, I want to learn so much more. There's so much I need to know.
Well, he carries around a big hat with him all the time. And it's very weird, yeah.
In bed, I'm just talking about giving points to Gryffindor. I'm feeding into this joke too much. Well,
No. Keep going. I'm starting to swell up. Yeah, no. Swell up. Tell me how close I am to winning that house cup, baby boy.
That sounds like something they would say in a British aristocracy.
I'm
starting to swell.
Good heavens!
All right. So anyway, back to the movie. So Maddie has now realized she's being stalked. She tries to call the police, and it is that kind of typical, horror killer outside the house kind of motif. Cuts the power and punctures the tires of her car, so she can't even escape. She gets lipstick and writes on the window, I won't tell, didn't see her face. It kind of makes up a lie saying, boyfriend's coming home. And, he looks at it. And just kind of takes off his mask, showing his face.
And this is where we find out that it's Claude Giroux's cousin. I immediately was like, is that Claude Giroux? What are you doing in this
now
movie?
Now that I think about it, yes, he does look like Claude Giroux.
For any 18-year-old millennials who don't love hockey, that's a hockey reference. So you're welcome.
Look, hockey's about to be outlawed. We have to make
That's true. Jason X knows all. I love that he was just right there, right? I mean, there's so much that happens. Like, he's just right there. But I'll tell you what I give a fuck about. There are so many goddamn windows in that house. It is crazy how much glass was used in the construction of that home. Fuck! That is the worst house.
Only house with more glass was that house from 13 Ghosts.
That's agreed. Fair. I think, did the house from You Should Have Gone Home or whatever, You Should Have Left.
You don't even remember it. That house. And you picked it.
I don't. Nobody remembered it. It's fine.
You should have gone to Chuck E. Cheese.
That house had a lot of glass. No, but it's like an A-frame home that sits in the middle of the woods. Of course, it's like 90% glass, you want to see the beautiful trees and whatnot. And also, they, as we learn later, they definitely upgraded, because they don't just have glass, they have like shatter resistant glass, which is amazing. Yeah. And extraordinarily expensive. Mm. Yeah.
I can only imagine. I wonder if that was intended, or if a bird just flew into the window and they're like, let's use it.
Yeah.
So
some of that $1 million budget went to them fixing the windows of the house.
Yes, correct. No, I thought the house was theirs. Was Flanagan's house. It is. The story is that they practice a lot of the scene design and the way that they were going to be shooting the movie in the Flanagan household, but they ended up having difficulties finding a house that looked a lot like theirs. So apparently this is very similar to what their house looks like, or as close as
could. Their house, this is not the house that they literally live in, but they used their own home as inspiration for the set design of
that is correct.
House.
And the cinema, cool. And the cinematography of where they were going to place the shots and how they were going to follow her around and whatnot. Yeah.
So after Maddie
writes her message on the glass, trying to plead with him to, you know, just leave her alone. He takes the mask off and, you know, asks her if he can, she can read his lips. And after him, like, punching the door and scaring her a little bit more, she nods her head yes. And then he just kind of taunts her and basically just tell her, like, I'm going to come in there. So after she runs around, goes to tries to hide in another room, like, she gets, I think at this point, like, she had already grabbed, like, a hammer or something just to try and defend herself. And she's hiding in one of, like, the, I guess it was, like, a spare bedroom, like, an office room. And it's very quiet. She's just sitting in there. And then we just start hearing, like, the sound of, like, knocking against the window. And, you know, you think, like, okay, he's just kind of staying there tapping. But as she slowly turns, you just see Sarah's body there tapping against the window. And he's just holding Sarah's body against the window, using her arm to tap on it.
That was a super decent defensive position. Sarah's dead body really fucked that up.
Yeah.
I don't blame her, though. Maddie, it freaked me out, so I can only imagine Maddie.
Yeah. So to try and distract him, she gets her car keys and kind of has to quickly open the original door that Sarah was at and which she had written on, sets her car alarm off, and then runs back to that same window, reaches out and tries to get Sarah's phone out of her pocket. But she gets caught by the killer before she can grab it and quickly tries to lock herself back in. Although she also does get a good swing at him and stabs him in the arm with the hammer she had.
No, she drilled the spikes of the hammer directly into his forearm. That was awesome.
Yeah, I was into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like on the edge of my seat at that part. I was like, "Ooh, let's go!"
See, I figured you would have hated that because that's...
No, I mean,
well, I mean, no, I think Dan enjoyed it because, like, you know, good, he got hurt. Fuck that guy.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like, I was totally excited about that part.
This is the, like, ever living murder guy, bad guy that we're dealing with here, because, I mean, he gets pretty nasty gouged on his arm, right? Like, you would say he's bleeding. Pretty
that's
well,
okay. He had Sarah's blood-soaked shirt to just cut off and use as a bandage.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, he's so evil.
Yeah, no, he was a dirty boy.
I'm a dirty boy.
He's supposed to pee into, like, the wound, right? That's how you sterilize it.
Yeah, correct. But yeah, so he does that, and then we have some wounds later on that are probably of equal value that are not treated the same. So I don't know. It's interesting. So I'll poop on that. But otherwise, yes, I like this part. This was good.
And so after this, we just get some more, you know, kind of jumping between him circling the house, her kind of going from room to room. And eventually she tries to get up through the, like, second story window. But in that attempt, she gets shot in the leg by his crossbow.
Okay, hang on. Here is the part. Here's number two part where I'm like, this guy fucking sucks. This villain fucking sucks. This guy is the biggest fucking bot I've ever seen in a movie. His whole job right now is just to walk the fucking perimeter. She throws the flashlight and he walks over there like a guard from Oblivion, like, stop right there, criminal scum. Nobody breaks the law on my watch. And he does it like five times. Like, I'm just like, this is the biggest bot I've ever seen.
It's a little, what the fuck? It's a touch stormtroopery. Yeah. Like, hey, what was that? Let's go check it out. And then, like, Luke and Leia run to stage left.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little bit of a small bit that I wasn't a fan of.
I think in all seriousness, the problem with this character, and it's nothing against the actor, I think the problem with this character is he's so shallow. Like, he just doesn't give any motivation except I am evil. And it's like, okay, but why? And he's like, because. I think it's the writing of this character that's bad.
Which is, like, kind of crazy, because there are other movies out there with very similar, like, one-dimensional like murder hobo, if you will, and that's pretty much what he is. He just goes, I'm gonna go murder, and that's what he does. But they somehow still do better, and I don't know what it is about this guy in particular, other than that he is both, you know, quote-unquote ingenious by, like, locking her in her own home, which, whatever, and then also the dumbest guy who will go chase, like, a small light in the woods. So yeah, it's he wasn't consistently you know, a crazy super psychopath. And he's also not like super OP like a Scream-esque character would be, you know?
So then, like Chris said, she gets shot in the leg with the crossbow. Okay, fine. His response is, all right, well, I'm going to go up there. But he's so stupid that he puts his crossbow up first. He knows she's not dead. He knows that she's just injured. Why would you throw your crossbow up there in such a vulnerable position?
I think we've long established that he is not a smart individual. Dude, fucking out a bunch, by the way. That shot to the leg, that's a lucky shot.
Yeah, that's a lot of
Mr. Artery. It's a big owl. It was not an arterial bleed, so it did miss an artery. But still, fuck, man. That looked painful.
Yes, this is a big ouchie, and this is what I'm talking about the next... This is the wound I'm talking about. Yeah. It looked... At least, I know it's not the same, but it looked equivalent to the amount of blood that he was originally losing with the hammer claw, and his was like on the wrist going, you know, down the river. Like it looked pretty gnarly. Hers was like in the thigh, got the chunky part, and she pulls it out. Yeah, she's gonna bleed, but like they should be on equal footing, I guess. But I don't know.
Agreed.
So he falls off, she gets the crossbow, and then we get a little scene of her just pouring alcohol into the giant hole in her leg and just trying to clean it and sitting there in large amounts of pain.
Yep, didn't like this one. Didn't like this scene at all.
She should have peed in it.
See?
If anything, we've learned, yeah. Yep.
No, it's like kind of, it reminds me a little bit of like the disinfection scene from like the Predator movies. Like every time Predator gets hit, he has like his big giant mechanical like first aid kit, and he's going to stick something in his leg and he's going to scream. I wanted Kate Siegel to be like, rawr, with some otherworldly fucking,
just make, like, otherworldly make like the Predator like clicking noises. Like the,
if you're trying to layer content in a movie, coming out that the deaf girl is actually Predator, that's the way to do it, man.
Just tie it into the series.
Yeah, and then Kate Siegel just turns invisible, and then she goes outside and she starts
hunting him. Oh my god!
He's walking around there. All of a sudden, three red laser dots are sitting on his forehead.
What?
What a twist!
You hear her go, "Want some candy?"
I see Shyamalan right now just stirring his tea with a tiny spoon, like, that's pretty good.
So after she's like cleaned her leg a bit, she's trying to arm the crossbow, and I've never used the crossbow. I don't really know the terminology, but she is trying to pull I'm just going to say string because I don't know the actual term for it.
It's no pun intended, but it is cock. It is to cock.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she's trying to and keeps, you know.
And yeah, that's the bow that you're talking about there. It's the bow part of the crossbow. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you're trying to take the bow and put it onto the cross by cocking it. I'm making all this up.
It's okay that we don't know it because only, apparently, in Dan's world, only 80-year-old geriatric retirees use crossbows.
I mean, if an 80-year-old geriatric retiree can pull that back and arm it, good for them.
Yes.
So she's trying to cock the crossbow, keeps failing, just keeps coming right out of her hands, and clearly she's...
Talk more about the cocking and the coming.
Note as soon as I said it. But clearly, she's not having the best time. Her hands are all bloody, and he's just watching from the window, and he makes some comment of like, you know, not so easy, is it?
Which was a weird comment, by the way. That was like, are we supposed to feel
so
bad for him?
Weird.
He wants to feel tough.
It's not so easy.
There's a reason he's killing all these people.
I guess not.
Someone in...
Because he's a big, strong boy?
Someone down the line has made him feel like a bitch somewhere in some way. So that is why that line makes sense.
Well, stop using a crossbow and you won't feel like such a bitch.
So at this point, we hear some banging at the front door, and it is John, Sarah's boyfriend, has... showed up looking for Sarah and Maddie as well. Did know that he wasn't home when Sarah was trying to get Maddie to come over, saying, oh, we can watch a movie. John won't be home for at least like another hour. So now he's home and he's like, the fuck's going on? Obviously, Maddie doesn't know this, but our killer hears it. And he comes around the other side of the house with his flashlight, right in John's face and kind of posing as a police officer and kind of questioning John.
Thought it was a smart move.
Yeah. Especially the way he held the flashlight, so he knew it would kind of cover up his torso and just kind of leave his face. So at that point,
for being such a bot, yeah, that was very smart.
It was a good move.
So he asked for John's phone to say he's calling for backup. Little things. John's kind of, you know, at first he's like willing to help, try to figure out what's going on, where his girlfriend is, where Maddie is. But after a little bit, kind of starts growing suspicious of this guy. And so as our killer's kind of like, you know, playing along and shining the flashlight places, acting like he's looking for stuff, John has a huge rock in his hand ready to clock him in the head. But it's at this point, Maddie comes down to the door, sees what's going on, and bangs on the door. And as John looks to see what that noise was, he gets a quick stab in the neck.
This one got me. I didn't like this.
I didn't like it because I was like, oh my god. Like, another weenie moment where he's like, didn't think I could beat a big jock type like you.
Yeah,
I couldn't take a big guy like you down.
It's the smart move.
It's just so cringy. Like, I'm just like,
it
oh
is.
God.
It was cringy, but the whatever effect they used for the knife just like effortlessly going into the neck, that was,
yeah,
that was like, that hurt. Like, I was like, ah, that's
too
real.
No, it was like
real.
A hot knife through butter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that thing was so sharp.
And quiet, too. It was just like, flint.
Quiet,
like, usually they
quick.
Give it like a weird like sound effect. Yeah.
I like the scene a lot, actually. And it actually kind of answers some of the arguments we've already had to this point. The thing that gives him away to, what's our guy's name?
John,
thank
you. Man!
The exchange between man and John. What gives man's true identity away to John is when he's fiddling with his pockets and Sarah's earring falls out, which actually lends credence to the idea of this guy is a serial killer more than a mass murderer, because he's taking trophies from everyone. Even after he kills John, he takes his watch. So I think I think that actually sort of solidifies it in a way.
Yep. Mm, I agree.
But I don't think we talked about the best thing out of this scene, which is saying a lot, because we get a neck stab, we get a whole lot here, but he gets the phone and pretends to call the chief of police, and then the sheriff, and he says, hey, we have a 719 down here. Anyone look up those codes?
Meant to, but forgot. Nope.
Well, allow me, gentlemen. That's not a thing. A 719, obviously, not a thing, doesn't exist.
Kind of figured he was making shit up.
However, individually, a code 7 and a code 19 do mean things. Shall I tell you what they mean?
Please do.
A code 7 means mealtime, and a code 19, this is not unanimous. I think this might be kind of like from place to place, but a code 19 typically means drunk. So the best thing to come out of this
drunk
movie is anytime I want to go get drunk and go to Applebee's, I'm going to say, hey, I think we need to go code 719, like right now. The mountains are blue. Code 719. Give me my burger.
Mountains are blue.
But even though John's been stabbed in the neck, he does try to wrestle the killer, put him in a chokehold to buy Maddie enough time to escape. And we see her try to run, but all of a sudden she's been clocked in the head with the rock that John had, and all of a sudden the killer's on top of her and just starts bashing her head in and crushes her skull. But
this is her weird premonition.
We then
time.
Zoom in on her face where she looks at the camera and says, you can't run. And yeah, as Kyle mentioned, this is like her premonition. She is actually sitting inside the house, and essentially this is all going through her head where she's basically telling herself, like, you can't run, you can't do this. If you keep trying to hide, you'll eventually bleed out. I looked at it as this was her inner, like, writer kind of psyche, like, playing it out, like, all right, here's all the possible endings that will happen. You know how majority of these possible endings are going to go. It's going to end with you dying. Simple as that.
Is this a good time to bring it up?
I would love to, actually. Yes. So a recent thing, this became sort of like an internet craze, was to identify whether or not you had an inner monologue or not. And it's kind of cathartic because like a lot of people just think everyone thinks the same way. But this was like concrete proof that our brains are just as different as everything else about us. Right. Left-handed versus right-handed, you know, our distinctive body features, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to propose an exercise to you, gentlemen. OK. And for the listeners, feel free to engage. So some people, and I think it goes back to that left or right brain dominant thing. Some people have an inner monologue. Some people do not. Me, for example, I do not have an inner monologue. I pretty much, my brain works in illustrations. Like when I think of something, I usually see it. I visualize it. I don't hear someone saying or conversing with me about it. And the way to figure this out is, let's do a quick exercise. So I'm going to say a word and you tell me what happens in your brain when I say this word. Okay, so we'll keep it consistent with the theme of the movie. The word is burglar. So imagine that word. What happens?
I immediately picture a man in black pants, black and white striped shirt with a black knit cap on and a very shitty like black eye mask on.
Okay. Think about the word. Think about specifically the word. Do you hear the word? Is the word being repeated back to you by a voice in your head? Or do you visualize the letters in synchronous spelling out the word burglar?
Are we just saying the first thing that happens? Or
sure.
Because like, I mean, the first thing that happens is I have an inner monologue. Like, I know that. But I also can like picture the words in my brain, like visually. But I mean, the first thing and the most thing that happens the most is like definitely an inner monologue in my head.
Okay.
Yeah, I get that too. I think when I read that post at one point about like people realizing that there aren't, like, some people just don't have that, it's pretty wild. I don't think I knew about that until, you know, like you said, mm-hmm. internet craze a couple years ago.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting, especially as someone who has zero voice in their head. Like, I don't know how I speak. I just speak. My wife is so confused about it. She's like, what do you mean you don't have a conversation with yourself? She's like, right. How do you know what you're going to say? I was like, I don't. I just start talking and it works out.
Oh, that makes sense. Huh, that makes a lot of sense.
Does it? A lot of things coming together now, right?
Everything's coming together.
So when you read a book, you don't hear the words reverberated back in your head. You're just looking at letters and they make sense to you because you're reading them.
It's very strange because I tend to visualize the words almost like on a chalkboard in my brain. And I think honestly, that's why reading for long periods of time has always been difficult, because I might hear it slightly, but it's not something like I don't conversate about it in my head. Like there's not a conversation. That's not how the thought happens. You know what I mean? Like it.
Hmm. So if this was you going back to the movie, if this was you in this case, what would have been happening in your
head? I'm faster. I'm just going to run. I'm just fast. I'm fast. I'm very fast. And that's all I got.
So Jarvis would have been dead.
Do you have Jeff Goldblum's voice in your head of must go faster?
No, I have no voice. I just know if I'm not very fast, he's gonna kill me. So I am very fast.
He just sees a picture of a cheetah and he's exactly. like, great.
Yeah. It's because you know, consider her options, which she's doing actively right now. Like she can't hear. Running in the woods at night in a forest sounds terrifying when you can't hear. Like, mm-hmm. But imagine like my brain. It's like, it's just like holding up flashcards. Like, what do you want to do?
I do like that part of her little inner monologue is like, she mentions the crossbow. Like, you can try and shoot him. You get one shot. So you better make it count. Like,
you gotta hit a kill shot. You gotta hit a kill shot. I thought that was pretty, honestly, a little cringe, but yeah.
So after Maddie's little inner monologue, she, you know, comes to term with there's only one way out of this. She needs to kill him. So while she's having this moment outside, the killer is taking cigarettes out of John's pocket. And as Jarvis said, takes his watch. And at this point, Maddie's cat, which early in the movie kind of like got out of the house when Sarah was by, kind of walks up. He looks like he's about to kill the cat as he keeps telling it, don't worry, you're going to be with your mom soon, or she's gonna be what you are. And at this point, arrow comes out of nowhere, stabs him in the shoulder.
Does the dog die? Also does cats, and they got their money's worth.
Yep, yes they do.
Immediately I went there.
Oh dude, I went there at the beginning of the movie when she's shaking the cat food. I was like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, no, 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 no. Don't tell me he killed it.
That was the first thing I wrote down in my notes was, oh, they're going to kill the cat, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because like when she was shaking the food and then later when he's tapping on the window with Sarah's body, I'm like, don't tell me he's just going to be tapping on the window with just like the cat's
bonk,
body.
Bonk, bonk, with the dead cat in his hand. Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I thought.
You know, it'd be a very funny turn of events if he was like, do it, if he killed the cat, he got his crossbow back, and they put a tally on it. So he's just been killing animals.
He's moved on from squirrels to cats now.
The only reason he killed Sarah is because one of the crossbow arrows ricocheted and broke her window, and she was all mad about it. And he was like, "No, stop, 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 stop! Oh, damn it!
No, shut up! Don't tell mom! Shush! Shut up! Yeah, shut up!"
Yeah, it's literally that. Like, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine. Don't worry about it. Don't tell mom. You're fine.
People is my new squirrel.
Sprays Axe body spray everywhere to confuse his scent.
I did like the quip. The quip about the cigarettes. He pulls the cigarettes out and he's like,
oh, yeah.
He's like, you know, John, these things will kill you. And that was pretty silly. It was pretty funny.
So yeah, Maddie shot him with the crossbow. She goes to run back in the house and one arrow was left behind. So she went back to reach and get it, but not quick enough. And the killer comes up and not only slams her arm into the door, but we get, which eventually became the classic Mike Flanagan theme of bam, someone's hand has to get fucked up.
That's pretty rough.
And he proceeds to stomp over and over again on her hand, breaking all of her fingers.
If there are two things you can be sure of that you'll receive in a Mike Flanagan film, it's some sort of like visual of mind projection and hand torture. Those two things are a given.
Yes.
As predictable as death and taxes.
Mm-hmm. And Katie Siegel in some
being incredibly hot in some way, shape, or form. Absolutely.
Yep.
After this, I had always got a hope like she would like, you know, she's in a lot of pain clutching her hand, and I always kind of hope she would lean back against that same like pillar and then have the inner monologue again, like her other self is sitting there like, all right, so this is now gonna be a lot harder. You only have one working hand, so
we were talking briefly before we started recording, and Kyle brought it up. He's like, you know, how's she gonna sign? And I was like, I didn't even think about that.
Does that mean like if like one of her fingers on one hand is broken, does that mean like she technically talks with a lisp?
Get out of here. I made that joke already. Get the fuck out of here.
You get the fuck out.
I mean,
wait, guys.
Was I here when you made that joke? Guys, I don't know if that wasn't even recorded.
No, it was earlier when we were talking about it earlier. I was like, oh, does that mean she signs with an accent or is that
I don't remember that.
Wait, but guys, since her hand got crushed, does that mean that she signs with like some sort of accent or something?
We haven't thought of that. Let's talk about that.
Damn, that's a really great point.
Thanks. I came up with that all on my own.
At all. It's actually really,
and we haven't talked about that at all. So it's a good thing you brought it up.
So at this point, so Maddie gets her horrendously mangled hand back inside the house, closes and locks the door. This is the point he threatens her that he's gonna come in the house, but she just reaches down to the giant gaping hole in her thigh from the arrow and with her own blood writes on the window, "Do it, coward." So he walks away, goes over to back to where he had the tire iron in his hand from a little bit before, and goes to start trying to break the door in, break all the glass. She quickly goes to the laptop and types out like a little message in case she dies, like writes it, you know, about 5'9", male, neck tattoo, like a little message to her parents and her sister and that she died fighting.
Yeah, super sad. Like, I think a thoughtful touch because, you know, throughout the story, like as intense as like the action and the horror is, like we grow very fond of Maddie. And it just kind of spoke to her character. Like, even in this moment, she was always thinking of family and her loved ones.
So she runs away, goes into the bathroom, and locks herself in. And she's got a knife in her hand, and she's just waiting to see him come through the door. And she had the good glass on that door. Took that man a minute. But we now see behind her, there's glass falling behind her. And then we see his feet as he's now come through the window behind her, and he's sitting in the bathtub behind her. How's he phrase it? Something about he could stab the right spot and make her scream.
Yeah. Oh, he said she's holding out on him.
That's it. Yeah.
I liked it.
Cringe.
Yeah.
I liked it too, actually.
He holds complete dominion over her. Like, he feels like God because he can kill her at any moment. So at this point, all of the dialogue is just him hyping himself up. It's like Harry and Marv. Mm. Like, when they finally get a hold of Kevin McAllister. Like, they're like, yes!
Yeah. And of course, the last thing, when he says that last thing, he breathes a little too hard, and she feels it hit the back of her neck. And so as his knife is coming towards her, she moves, turns, flipped her knife around, and stabs him.
Yeah, I didn't know she was like SEAL Team 6 all of a sudden.
Yeah. Excuse a touch kung fu.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, yeah. But maybe like a little too cool.
Right. A little bit Daredevil.
Yeah, especially with like all the blood loss.
It was cool, but
like, is she really gonna all of a sudden just quickly flip that around her hand perfectly?
She was using her sense of smell. She knew exactly where she wanted to stab, all thanks to her heightened sense of smell.
It was cool, but was it cool enough that Maddie could have pulled it off? You know, like, that was my question.
Because how cool is Maddie? She's pretty cool, but like that cool?
Is she that cool though?
It's important to remember at this point that they are both severely injured. You kind of forget, because the movie is very fast paced, and then it's not, right? It's just him walking outside the exterior of the house. So it's hard to kind of remember, but they are both really, really fucked up at this point.
So she runs away, she gets back to her kitchen, and you know, she just kind of sits down on the floor and seems like she's just, you know, basically just gonna pass out from blood loss. He comes into the room, sees her foot, and as he walks towards her, she quickly sprays him in the eyes with Hornet and Wasp Killer.
No. You're misreading that bottle. It's Wasp, Hornet, Killer. That's all the things it's effective against. It's not Wasp and Hornet Killer.
Right.
It's Wasp, Hornet, Killer. All things that will work when applied with this can.
It's like the Adam West Batman with the shark repellent sprays.
Same principle. No, she had the tools she needed to defeat this gentleman all along.
Yeah, she should have just sprayed it around the perimeter of her house from like the upstairs window.
Like an anti-bear circle.
Around the house. So she's sprayed him in the eye with the Wasp Hornet Killer spray. And essentially blinded him. Which she then picks up the fire alarm she had from earlier that she took off the wall, turns it back on. So now he has the burning insecticide spray in his eyes and now high-pitched ringing in his ear. And then they struggle a little bit. He starts to choke her, but she's able to pick up a corkscrew that fell on the floor in the process and stabs him right in the throat.
When he walks up, when she's about to spray him in the eyes with the Wasp spray, and he says calls her a cunt, right?
Yeah.
And that's the moment I wish she just signed sprayed him right in the eyes. Just... like, it was the perfect part. I was like, ooh, I'm right here, I'm fucking right there. Fucking right there, Mike, give it to me. And he just edged me and just did not finish, and I was so upset.
That would have been the perfect response. Like, he's just fucking cunt. She's just bitch spray.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, it would have been so good.
Tisk tisk. Missed opportunities.
Hindsight's 2020.
In terms of the visuals that she experiences as she's dying, like he's choking her, and all of a sudden you start seeing
terrifying
family pictures. Oh, that right. Like, you know, as much fun as we have on this podcast, like, I'm not okay with how surreal that felt. Someone on his writing staff died. I'm sure of it. And it was brought back to life. There's no way that someone didn't experience that and then wrote that scene. Because, wow, that made me feel some things.
If we know anything about Mike Flanagan, he likes to be choked out. So maybe it was him.
Have you seen her? Have you seen Kate Siegel? She could choke me any day of the week. Of course.
Honestly, the only two writers were him and her, so it could have been either one of them.
I'm just saying this whole movie is like a weird like fetish play between the two of them. I'm into it, but like
to be a fly on the wall during the filming of that. Just them winking at each other like, you remember when we wrote that one?
I do. Zip, she stabs him right in the throat with the corkscrew. He falls over dead. She gets her phone from his pocket, dials 911, and as she just sits on the porch waiting for the cops come, her cat shows up. She pets her cat and just smiles as we see blue flashing lights getting closer in the distance. And that is the end.
Final thoughts. Hey, Maddie, maybe don't smile.
So yes, great. Don't smile covered in blood as the cops approach. Yeah, this is bad.
Right, and you're definitely being unresponsive to the responding officer's commands. You know, I'm not trying to cramp your style here, but I'm looking out for you.
Maybe just lie down with your hands behind your head. Just like ride it out. We'll see how we go here. I don't disagree. It's a weird smile at the end. I usually like to have my horror movies end on like as I've said before, a bad note. But this was like, this is all right. This is a good turn, I guess, for this movie. Yeah, no, it was, I liked the corkscrew kill, by the way. That was fun. It was well done. It was a nice little spurt of blood, and yeah, it felt good.
You could kind of tell in his face a little bit too, just like, oh fuck. Oh god damn it.
My one weakness, stab. yeah. So with that, let's scurry on over to the spoopometer. Dan, what's our scale this week?
So our spoopometer this week is, you know, 0 to 85 decibels, because if you go over 85 decibels, your hearing starts to really take like a beating. So you kind of want to keep it around 85. So without hurting your ears, guys, 0 to 85. Where would you rank this? How many decibels?
Well. How scared was I? As I said, in the first third of the movie, I would have given this probably a good 75 decibels. And, you know, 85, by the way, at that height that where you start losing hearing, is a hairdryer or a blender or a power lawnmower, like probably pretty close to your face. So, you know, that's pretty loud. I don't disagree. So, yeah, I think at the beginning part of this movie would have been 75. I'm going to average out a little bit lower only because, yeah, I think something switched halfway through and I lost the fear and was just kind of watching and hoping for Maddie to win. So it came more of like a hero villain kind of story rather than a thriller slasher, I guess. I think averaging out 50, I was a little worried, let's say 45 decibels. So a nice calming, like loud conversation in a room.
Scary wise, I do agree the whole first third of it with all the crazy tension and kind of being in Maddie's shoes of just the silence and the fear that comes with that, knowing you're being watched, you can't hear anything. Like that whole first part of the movie to me, I would give it about a 75. And yeah, I agree. Like towards the end, it does lose me a bit, you know, scare wise. That's more so I'm just rooting for her to kill him. I will say, it does get a little bit more points for me because, you know, we do get some brutal hand trauma and you know me, the sound of bones breaking triggers me. So I'm going to give it a solid 70 decibels. I love this movie and I'm glad I got to watch it and do it for the show.
Easy day. 65 decibels. Maybe 60. Nope.
Perfect.
69.
Perfect.
There you go.
69
there you
decibels.
Go.
I'm positive.
Nice.
I'm positive of it. No, it really is scary. I personally think that it's not so much the first third, but rather the first half, like 50% of the movie really did have me on edge. You know, it does kind of teeter out for the most part. I really was never in a state of calm throughout the whole movie. It did a really good job. It didn't use necessarily jump scares. It built tension pretty organically the whole way through. And I really appreciated that. It was scary. I am happy to report that it was scary. And that's not easy to do. storytelling in today's day and age. So 69.
Keeping mine very, very brief, I liked the movie. I thought it was very entertaining. I think it's worth watching. I did not think it was scary. There were scary elements that were real, but overall, I mean, maybe like a 20, like not very scary. So yeah, worth watching, not scary.
I get it. So with that, I want to go ahead and thank everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for following us, because I know you do, following us on Twitter and Instagram and whatever else is out there. Come join us on some discussion on Facebook. We also have that. And I don't know, reach out to us. Say hi. And I want to thank Andrew Cavanaugh and Connor McLeod for all the assistance they've given us, and enjoy this one. I'm sure it's fine. So, Chris, what do you want to tell all the incel hunters out there?
Thanks for stopping by and having a horrible time.
Hey, time for a code 719. Let's go. Wrap it up.
Let's go, boys. Whoop. Off to Applebee's.